protest the prison system's isolation policies. Corrections Secretary Jeffrey Beard said in a statement that all inmates began accepting prison-issued meals early today. Beard said he's pleased the strike ended before any inmate suffered serious injury. A federal judge had given authorities permission to force-feed inmates if necessary to save their lives. More than 30,000 inmates had been refusing meals when the strike began in early July. By this week, the number had dwindled to 100 strikers, including 40 who had been on strike continuously since July 8th. The strike ended after two Democratic state lawmakers promised to hold hearings this fall on inmates' complaints that gang leaders are often held for decades in solitary confinement in isolation units. President Obama is in Russia for the G20 summit, but if there are to be any additional talks between Obama and Russian President Vladimir Putin there, they'll have to be private.
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
The Temple of Set is the Church of Satan grown up. The Church of Satan started out on a very self-indulgent, materialistic level. At the time, this was the way it was presented, that there was nothing more than that. The nude female figure was used as a living altar, was a symbol of carnality, of the ties to the flesh. And the sexual content was really beside the point. I have been an altar several times. I don't function that way at this time because the Temple of Set simply doesn't use living altars. They're not ruled out. We simply haven't had occasion to use it. It was quite an experience. It was one that I felt honored by and that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! You guys have no jurisdiction here.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? What did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet Radio for Smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Things are different when I was a young girl. Huh? Well, we're all young girls. Today the kids have it easy. Years ago we had to go to the mikveh. We had to bathe in the holy water to be pure. The bum that come out of a pool room. Oh, things are really rough for us. We didn't dare to have premature babies. Then I shoved the kid back for 2 months. You were skinny, the fella's mother dead. She's a good guy. I'll be back in those days to be healthy. Times have changed, though. Today they do not sing the Mazel Tov song. The groom does not step on the glass. You know when they play, ba bum 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 bum. They don't do that anymore. It scares the bride, she has a miscarriage.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, the Angry Indian, editor-in-chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service. Logging to the Fourth World from AboriginalNewsWire.tumblr.com and AboriginalPress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, thought and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living on the imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neofascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earth and love and solidarity to the entire original family at this time of strife and struggle. And it is a time of struggle. I'm your host, the Angry Indian. And I'm here with our executive producer and engineer, Guadalupe Morales. And, again, go to get my coffee. Hear various opinions. We got quite a bit of, I haven't seen anything in the inbox, which again is aboriginalmediagroup@gmail.com. But, I've been getting, in-person comments about the atheism bit because it does seem that a lot of white folks who define themselves as atheists seem to be offended when you say that atheism, as is being argued, is a European concept, or at least is brought up within European concepts. And, one of the things that came up in these discussions, and it happened three times actually, that these atheists brought up Zeitgeist, the original, internet film, as their proof that it had nothing to do with race and such and so on. And I'm like, well, no, and I made it clear, I disagree with them. That entire Zeitgeist, meme, and it is a meme. I mean, it's pointing out memes, but it's no less, it's created no less a meme in and of itself. Jordan Maxwell, isn't that his name, Luca? Jordan Maxwell and a handful of the others that we're using there, I mean, aren't they somewhat connected to, I don't want to say the far right. I don't know if that's accurate per se, but I know it's a bunch of white guys that sit around as if they're the smartest men in the room. And perhaps even the smartest men in the world. And you know who I'm talking about. He was one of them. I mean, this whole idea of the reptilian and what have you. All of it. I mean, there's a lot of talk about you know, looking at the best and looking at things on an even keel and being completely logical about everything. But see, this was the entire point that I was bringing up, and evidently I struck a nerve someplace, because, you know, the Europeans are so arrogant, and I mean this. I really mean this. I'm not saying this is in your DNA. I'll leave that to the cultural nationalists to you know, make those sorts of xenophobic arguments. But it is really something about Europeans. And it's pure tribalism. That, you know, if you say anything at all in terms of really questioning, you know, what the hell is happening in terms of the entire scheme of the world and how we all view the world, well, you know, a lot of people take offense to that. Now, you know, there was one person on Twitter who I'm not sure if he actually heard the show or not. And I'm going to point out he's a gamer, because you know how I feel about gamers. Yeah, I have no respect for gamers. I really mean that. You know, and it's just maybe my personal experiences, but I've run into so many of these gaming types that's all they do. I mean, literally, it's like people who are really into sports. That's all they do. They can't talk about anything. They don't seem to do anything that doesn't revolve around, you know, whatever it is that they're into. Hip-hop, same thing. You know, it's like, what else do you do? What else do you talk about? You would think that there's nothing else in the universe besides these things. And you will always look at these bits. And I'm including hip-hop in this. Because if white people were not interested in it, do you think anybody would give a damn? Right? In the paradigm of things, you know, this Western European paradigm that we're all stuck in, especially in North America, if white people didn't pay any goddamn attention to that ism, do you really think anybody would care about any of these rappers? About being ghetto fabulous? About wearing your jeans or your Dickies halfway down your keister, if not below that? I don't understand. How do you even walk around? And why do so many of you do the perp walk when you've never even had that kind of experience? You know, I don't understand this. You know, I also heard two white guys calling each other pimp the other day on the bus. I mean, they both had pimples. You know, I'm just like, what the hell's going on here, man? What is going on? So, yeah, Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus. You know, it really amazes me on how, because of this MTV, you know, this, I don't even know what to call it. I don't even know what to call it. You know, my mother would have called it smart. You know, it's just, you know, this MTV, you know, monster that has been created. To just give you some background. Now, I can't remember his name right now, and I had asked you, Lupe, earlier, and you said you didn't know who I was talking about. Well, you were never really into, you never listened to punk, right? And The Clash, I don't know how long he stayed with them, but I'm going to say their first manager. Because I don't know how long he stayed with them. And I can't remember his name. And I'm thinking Don Letts, but I can't remember. If anybody knows, hey, let me know. Correct me. I'm going to say Don Letts, because I can't think of any other names right now. But anyway, he said he showed up to the MTV studios when they had solidified their product, right? Capitalist term, product, right? They had their pay channel. So they're sitting beside HBO, Showtime, what have you, MTV. It turns out that MTV, and I've known people who have worked for them, you know, over the years, and they said, yeah, you know, the word is that there was an unwritten rule, no non-white performers, no non-white music, period, on MTV. And supposedly the breakthrough was Michael Jackson. Now, what I'm getting ready to say is, now, he said this himself on a documentary about, I believe it was MTV. And again, I'm going to say, because I think it was Don Letts. He said that, you know, when he came in to represent The Clash, they took one look at him and told him that the service lift was around the corner. You dig what I'm saying? He wasn't even supposed to be in the building as far as they're concerned. And when he told them who he was, they didn't believe him. They actually, I believe, tried to get him physically removed from the office. So, you know, it took a while, and of course they apologized, but, you know, he was pretty clear that he hadn't gotten over that, you know, or he hadn't forgotten that episode. You dig what I'm saying? So, you know, you look at it how you want. MTV, to me, is pure goddamn capitalism, all right? Hip-hop is pure motherfucking capitalism. All right. You know, they thought they could, you know, make money off of convincing the fans and advocates of dadism that selling their own mothers was the end thing to do, they would push it. And a lot of, you know, a lot of people will go for it. And don't tell me that I'm being, you know, I'm crazy about this, because I'm not. We're going to get into a few things. We're going to talk about a few things. Because, there's a lot of things I want to talk about. And when it comes to talking about feminism, it's really difficult. Now, I've had women on to discuss various issues. You know, not always... I really don't want to use the term feminism, but I really don't have a choice, because this is the term that they use, or at least that they've accepted, and this is the term that's being used. Now, I'm going to tell you straight out now, up front, I don't like the idea of calling myself a feminist. Yes, I'm supportive of women's rights, for sure, you know, but I really do not consider myself a feminist, and I wonder how many men can actually honestly say that they're feminist. Because, you know, to me, one of the things about being a feminist is I was always under the impression that you had to be a woman in order to be a feminist. And here's where I'm coming from with that. You know, for men to necessarily feel that they have a right to hook up to a movement, to join a movement, or to put themselves within a particular political paradigm that really doesn't fit. See, I don't see any logic in that. See, and where I'm coming from with that is, if you're, you know, not of indigenous descent, I'm not saying that you can't work with me towards a goal. I'm not saying that, you know, I can't say, you know, ask you for counsel and what have you. I'm not saying that you can't be involved, you know, but the difference is you cannot run it. Or at least you shouldn't run it. You dig what I'm saying? Because the entire power dynamic is completely changed if you're holding the reins of power that have to deal with my liberation. So, you know, I'm not particularly keen from that aspect of males who are supportive of women's rights and women's causes and women's issues and what have you, of calling themselves feminists. So I like to say I'm a male who is supportive of feminist, you know, perspectives, feminist causes, what have you. You know, I mean, really, a lot of these isms, because you have to be so careful on how you put things. And I'm saying this to you lefties. You let the far right put you into this position. You know, it wasn't a liberal, quote-unquote, idea to come up with the term political correctness. It was it was conservatives pushing this type of nonsense in mainstream media to make it seem as if, well, you know, I'm being oppressed because I can't call you a faggot any longer and get away with it without being called on it, right? Because I can't call people niggas, spinks, and chinks and so on like I used to. You know, I don't refer to them as wrong people. They're gyps, right? And, you know, there's that heave over there, right? And, you know, and here's the Polak, you know, over here, right? You know, here's the goof down here. You have these paradigms that are, you know, localized, and then they take on greater significance, right? So, you know, the couple of times I've been called a heave, I mean, it was always on the East Coast. You know, when I've talked to Jews on the West Coast about it, they say that they've never heard the term. They don't even know what it is. And non-Jews, they don't know what it is at all. You know, most of them, if you talk about the epithets that are used towards Jewish people, they're not even aware of them. But they're aware of the epithets used against Asians. They're not aware of the epithets used against Italians, on the other hand. But see, when you go to the East Coast, you hear epithets, especially in Philly, right? Greaseball, WAP, what have you. Mick, right? And people use this in common chatter. And with always the idea that it doesn't mean anything. I'm just talking to you. And then when you really call them on the ethics of it, then it gets down to, well, we're all racist. Right? So then we start getting into a lot of generalizations that say all men are necessarily sexist pigs, or that, you know, say all black women, you know, all dance, all African dance is sexual, right? I mean, you have heard this before. You know, people do say this around the water coolers and on the lines while they're waiting, especially in goddamn Starbucks, for their coffee, for their $6 coffee. Think about this for a second. You know, memes, right? We hear a lot from the gamers about memes. We hear a lot from the intelligentsia about memes. Well, what about the Europocentric meme? And what about the fact that the Europocentric meme, you know, influences just about every fucking thing that goes on the planet, but white people refuse to acknowledge this? Now, what does any of this have to do with Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus? Well, it has a lot to do with it, actually, because all of a sudden now, there's this big controversy about the over-sexualization of women. I'm not saying that the conversation has not been going on, but it really hasn't been a conversation. It's really been, you know, a couple of people had trying to start a conversation, a whole lot of accusations, a whole lot of counter-accusations, a lot of male reactionism, right? A lot of, you know, in many ways, you know, structural rejection of the feminist argument or a feminist analysis. Because, you know, one of the things that gets me about this is I'm old enough to remember a time when, you know, the miniskirt, I guess, had been out for a bit. And then, you know, I was growing up doing like the half end of Free Love, right? So, you know, you saw things, you know, there was this new openness or what have you. And yes, women were being taken advantage of and women were being abused. And, you know, a lot of those hippie cats were no better and sometimes no worse, right, than the cats with the suits who lived in the suburbs, who, you know, everybody put their house keys into a bowl and they swapped. They voted for Nixon, though, at the next election, right? They really wanted Goldwater, but they voted for Nixon at the next election. And they talked about how the black people in the ghettos had such loose morals. But here, you know, it's different. We all live in a cul-de-sac. I know you. You know me, Bob, right? Well, hey, you know, can I have Mabel tonight? And you have Jill? You know, I mean, hey, let's just hang out. And, you know, it's okay. You know, when they smoked pot, it was, you know, they were on the cutting edge. If you're in the ghetto smoking pot, well, you're just a no-good goddamn dope head. Right? So Miley Cyrus can come around and gyrate on somebody. And, you know, some people made a big deal, you know, are making a deal about him being married and having a family and her being very young and they're doing this. And why did MTV allow this? But see, a lot of us were looking at how they were both doing their best and have made their careers on white people acting black or acting what they think is black, which is really one of my other issues with this, because the idea of black culture, of African culture as it exists in the Americas anyway, has been reduced to Miley Cyrus gyrating on Robin Thicke. So behind this now there's a willingness to talk about the over-sexualization of women. You know, nobody seemed to mind though when Lindsay Lohan was being, you know, used in this manner by Hollywood. Nobody seemed to care, especially not her family, which I find particularly interesting. You know, I mean, look at how Paris Hilton, all of them, you know, I mean, has anybody realized how mainstream, because we're going to talk about this too. I have some audio here. I can't remember her name. I'm going to try to find it. Lupe will find it before we put it on the credits, but we have a speaker. We have some brief audio of how the pornography, you know, industry has been mainstream. I mean, really, you know, what is the goddamn mainstream? What is the mainstream? The Mindy Project? Is that representative of the mainstream? If that's the mainstream, to where you have brown people that are going out of their way to be something culturally that they're not, to go against their entire cultural background, then, you know, let's admit what is, you know, pretty apparent, that the mainstream represents Western, white, Anglophone culture, period. So in order for them to have something exciting to, you know, to go beyond that, obviously they have to reach out, right? Because there's obviously nothing like this within their own goddamn culture. You know, this whole thing about, well, you know, race doesn't matter and whatever, that's a goddamn lie. Because white folks have always made it clear that race matters. This whole thing with Miley Cyrus and fucking Robin Thicke proves that race matters. What really bothered a lot of fucking white people that watched this shit was that she was really acting the way that they look at black women, right? Right? Where are these dances coming from? Where are the sounds and all this coming from? You know, we're watching white people being surrounded by black folks while they sit here and do the mime. They sit here and do the mime. And black folks, instead of really getting upset about this, yeah, a handful of us said something about it. But let's not act like the entire community is behind this, all right? The entire community is still waiting for, you know, the sky to open because, you know, Barack Obama is president. They're still waiting for this windfall of goodness that's going to come down on them. This windfall of white acceptance. And I've already heard this. If Miley Cyrus and Robin Thicke can bridge that gap, then it's okay with them. And you know, and what's funny is, it's the white feminists that are pointing out the racism involved in this. It's the white feminists that are pointing out the gender bias in terms of racism and how black women are viewed and how black female bodies are viewed and how black people are viewed in general when it comes to sexuality. It's really amazing to watch the conversations come down on this, because what's really funny is, and I guess this, I suppose this is what I'm getting to, is that black people aren't complaining that much at all. Yes, you know, the African feminists, they're definitely having their say on it, but I'm talking about the average person in the street, at least where I am, who I'm talking to, doesn't think that this is, you know, anything worth discussing. It doesn't really matter. Maybe it's a good thing. That is the overwhelming sentiment that I've encountered, that, you know, perhaps this is a good thing, that this will stop the racism. And when I'm like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? You know, we are the only people that is like, well, if you abuse us, then that means that you love us and you're going to accept us. You know, we really need to ask some serious questions. I'm speaking now as an African. Where this is coming from? Why are we bleaching our skin? Why do our women straighten their hair? I mean, look at Beyonce. Every time I see a new photograph of her, she's lighter, her hair is straighter and blonder each time. What color are her eyes this week? And she's not the only one. And I know I've mentioned Sammy Sosa before, but I did it. What? It was in the news. Yeah, I heard. Well, yeah, I mean, you're telling me that the Spanish language news is saying that he doesn't look like that anymore, because it was damaging his skin. Yeah, but he still has the straight hair. He still has the blue contacts and so on. I mean, there's a photograph of him flying around. It's sad. It's sad. I don't know what he did to his skin. I didn't think that damage could revert, because you have people all throughout Nigeria, St. Kitts, Jamaica, you know, who it looks like they've been in, you know, yeah, like they've been in a fire, you know, until you get close and you're kind of like, oh, so perhaps they're, I can't remember the condition. It affects all people, but I believe it affects African people primarily, where the skin, where you lose your pigment. What Michael Jackson was reported to have suffered from, which, you know, who the hell knows with that? Because, I mean, yeah, his skin might have had that issue, but the nose job, the chin replacement, the cheek work, the thinning of the lips, come on, brothers and sisters. You know, Michael Jackson was psychologically hurting. I mean, he had to be. He had to be. But then again, if he's hurting, then what the hell is happening to the rest of the planet? You know, I went to a cafe not too long ago here, you know, in lovely Portlandia, and I've never been in this place, and it was in one of the better to do areas over here. There's some pretty expensive homes over here, and I noticed that almost all of the women, I mean, not the women who work there, because they're paying them nothing, right? So I don't know what they would do if they had the money, but the majority of the customers, the female customers, they all had work done. They all had work done. I mean, some of them, if they smiled, I thought their skin would have ripped. You know, it's crazy. And the Botox. I mean, what the hell is going on? No one wants to be what the hell they were born. But at the same time, they'll tell you to be what the hell God made you, right? And then, which God? Male, female, which culture? Right? You know, culture. You know, what is this? I mean, this is the discussion I'm trying to raise. What the fuck is culture? What kind of culture is this, that this type of thing is mainstream and okay? And then at the same time, while MTV pushes this and the vehicle shows have pushed this, and we look at the porn industry, and what the hell are they doing? You know, I've been trying to tell people for a long time, Mary Carey, isn't that her name? Because we talked about this earlier, right? Mary Carey, she's an adult actress. Her and her agent, manager, whatever the hell he is, Bluebeard, you know, they have shown up to the Republican convention twice. And the adult movie industry, because it is an industry, I mean, I've known people who have worked in the thing during the 80s, and they said it was just the business. But now, it's so mainstream, it's the industry. I mean, it was always big, but I mean, now it's huge, right? The porn industry has gone completely mainstream. But, you know, as the audio that we're going to have up here later from you know, from a woman who writes and works on this, this is not Playboy. You know, this pornography out here today, if you could even call what Playboy was doing pornography, I consider, frankly, Playboy to be an example of erotica. It did represent his times, but it was a hell of a lot more respectful than what the hell you see now. And if you want to talk about the heyday of porn, of vintage pornography, if you want to actually give the credit of giving it the title of adult cinema, you know, there were a lot of retired actors who couldn't make it in mainstream films, but who still had some talent. You know, maybe they weren't always pretty in terms of the males and what have you. But, I mean, look, Ron Jeremy. Everybody knows who Ron Jeremy is. Yeah, whatever. Don't pretend you don't know who Ron the fuck Jeremy is. 70% of the internet traffic worldwide is based on adult material. So let's not play games with each other. All right? You know, let's be straight. If people were not looking at all of this stuff, there'd be no market for it. There'd be no market for it. It wouldn't be every goddamn place because sex fucking sells. But nobody wants to admit that either because we're still dealing with some Victorian holdover, right? You know, it's like in one sense, you know, you want the wife that you know, is totally, you know, the good mother, you know, keep the home hearth going and all that type of thing while you go out and mash for some grass. But then at the same time, you know, you want the, you know, the super sexy woman. Well, hey, I don't necessarily think that is anything evil in that. I mean, is it particularly fair to women? Well, that's the discussion that should be had. But see, the thing about it is every time women try to bring up the discussion, there's always some fucking guy that wants to come around and tell them to shut the fuck up because he thinks he's going to lose something. Now, you know, like most men, I'm going to be straight up. You know, I was an idiot in my goddamn 20s and then I fell in love with somebody and, you know, actually listened to what the fuck she had to say. And I think I've been a better human being ever since. But at the same time, though, you know, there's another angle to this. Now, yes, I understand that the adult industry is completely fucked up. But how did it get fucked up? You know, I mean, yeah, a lot of it has to do, if we want to take an Andrea Dworkin tip, you know, a lot of it has to do with this, you know, male, you know, as she would put it, maybe, you know, animosity towards women, you know, this ongoing class struggle between the sexes. And yeah, there is an aspect to that. Is that the entire thing? I don't think so. And I think a lot of it has to do with culture. Now, you know, I'm going to bring up some generalizations. So before anybody gets angry and sends me, you know, a totally, you know, a fucked up email, listen to what I'm having to say and take yourself out of your own, you know, cultural context for a moment, if you can, please. Now, I said if it wasn't the last episode, a couple episodes ago, if you want to talk about the over-sexualization of females, all you have to do is look at Latin media, which is going to become the norm here sooner or later. All right? You know, this isn't me. This isn't some anti-immigrant shit. But, you know, as long as capitalism in the United States and Canada continues to do what it's doing and they continue to siphon off everything that Mexico has, those folks are going to continue to come up here. And it's not, you know, racism to say, look, they tend to have their goddamn kids. They do. You know, every time I've ever, you know, passed by an abortion clinic, I saw really the majority of the women out there were Caucasian. You know, and again, this is just a general goddamn statement. But who the hell is having more abortions in this country? That's why they're trying to stop it. You know, now, if it was people of color that were doing this, do you really think the Republican Party would give a damn? You know, Reagan and Bush used to be all for abortion. You know, you'll never hear a Republican admit that. Matter of fact, Reagan's daughter, it was publicized. She had one when he was in office, I believe. And he didn't say a goddamn thing about it. He didn't say anything about it. They were all for abortion because it limited black births. Because that's who was going there. And it certainly, you know, kept the native populations from expanding. And we can get into the sterilization of native women if you really want to talk about goddamn misogyny, which is something that very few goddamn white feminists will do. Some of them, a lot of them, because they don't know about it. But when I have spoken to some, and I'm talking about a couple of goddamn PhDs from a well-known university in the Pacific Northwest, who said they knew about it, but they didn't think it was all that important. All right, they were working on casino issues, and that was their goddamn big issue. So, you know, again, trying to get into the mainstream, get the money, right? Because Jesus said, get the money, you know, don't respect each other, don't have any kind of, you know, reasonable relationship between the genders and shit, all the genders, And I'm saying that as an indigenous person. Yes, you got male and female, and I am not going to get into a biological argument. I know there's a lot of folks in the gay community that get tired of me saying this and don't like to hear it, but I'm sorry. If, you know, without straight folks, there'd be no gay folks. And, you know, for those of you who like to call, you know, straight people breeders and what have you, you're not helping the conversation. I understand you putting up with a lot of abuse. I understand that. But you got to be, reasonable. You have to be reasonable. If the entire world was homosexual, there'd be nobody. You know, but even then, what the hell is homosexual anyway? I mean, are we talking about homosexual people or homosexual acts? Because just about every gay man I've ever known has been with women. Most of them have been married. Some of them still secretly sleep with women. So, you know, same thing with a lot of the lesbians I know. Very few of them that I know are 100% goddamn, well, I only like women. Now, it doesn't mean that, again, I'm expecting somebody to be really angry about this. But, you know, well, here's my proof. I believe it was 1980. The book is called Homosexualities. It was written by two authors, and it was started off as a term paper for UCLA, I believe. This is a really thick book. It'll take you time to get through it. And what I'm about to bring up only takes about two pages of it. But one of the things that surprised the two authors of this study was the fluidity of sexuality. You know, the majority of people that they, you know, bisexual was still a dirty word, and it still is, you know, a dirty word, right? But the majority of people that they interviewed in San Francisco and New York. Now, again, this is during the late 70s. And by the time the book was published, I believe, yeah, like I said, 1980, right? You know, I mean, they couldn't give exact numbers, but they said that, the idea of, you know, of either gender being exclusive to their own gender, you know, totally, they said that they simply didn't observe that. And what it comes down to is, you know, people like who the fuck they like. You know, they're going to do what the fuck they're going to do. I don't care what law you come up with. I don't care what kind of hardship you put up with. People are going to get together. I mean, what's going on in Occupy Palestine right now? They've got a goddamn law now to keep people, to keep Palestinians and Israelis from dating. Why? Because they couldn't keep them apart. These people were jumping over the walls, going both ways so that they could be together. And it's not like they, you know, if an Israeli citizen, male or female, you know, went into a Palestinian town that they would just be accepted. No, absolutely not. I would assume there'd be a whole lot of distrust, if not, you know, outright anger, you know, the idea of being with the enemy. But, you know, you can't keep people apart. Well, actually, you can. You know, you can force them apart. You can come up with culture and an inner system of propaganda that has people hating each other before they even run into each other. Before they've even gotten a chance to know each other. You know, so, I mean, we all know that that's possible. Now, am I going on a tangent? Yes, I am. So, roll with me. Alright? What I'm trying to say is, this entire discussion around sexuality, this entire discussion around gender, this entire discussion, you know, around twerking and what have you, you know, how many of you are looking at the capitalism aspects? Now, yes, I know it's being written about, but the average person on the street isn't even looking at it like this. You know, and these young women who are out here putting, you know, like, I mean, come on, the selfies. You know, I'm at the point where I don't want to use tags on Tumblr anymore because you never know what the hell you're going to find. You know, and it's really goddamn irresponsible. Now, if you're an adult, that's one goddamn thing. But this site is primarily used by young people. So it's like, you know, I don't know what Tumblr's thing is. But then, you know, is it correct to really blame Tumblr? Now, you know I'm an anti-capitalist, so, you know, whatever. But is it correct, really, and illogical to blame Tumblr? Because if they open up a platform and anybody can sign on, it takes like 2 minutes to sign on. To get an account, right? You got people putting up whatever the hell they want to put up. Same thing with Facebook, you know, and they're just glomming up all, they're just hoovering up all this goddamn information. Well, look, you know, you are doing all of these private intelligence firms and what have you a fucking favor. I mean, I have two friends already. I know when their menstruals are. I'm not married to them. You know, because they put all of their business out there on social media. You know, I don't want to know. It's none of my business when their moon is due. You dig what I'm saying? But they put it out there. they put it out there because we have an environment that says, well, hey, you know, you're kind of boring if you don't put it out there, or you're not with it if you don't put it out there, or just, I don't want to be left out, so I'll put it out there. Anything. You know, my privacy, oh yeah, I'm worried about the government and all these private companies looking at me, but at the same time, I'm putting out, you know, where my cycle is running. Why does anybody need to do that? Why do you feel the need to announce to the world when you're due? You know, I don't get that. I don't get that. You know, well, hey, maybe Andy Warhol was right. You know, everybody's going to get their 15 minutes of fame. And he was damn right about that. But now it's going to end up being a lifetime, or as long as these computer systems last, that this stuff will be flying around. And it's reflective. I mean, if the internet is reflective of anything, it's really reflective. It's really reflective of the fact that, you know, we have a lot of fucking hang-ups. And the people who I think have the most hang-ups when it comes to sexuality and all this other shit, I'm sorry, but it's not because of your DNA, it's because of your culture. You have to ask the questions on why, you know, why Western Europeans have such goddamn problems about this. Now, again, this is not to say that women are not being dogged out. Man, women are being dogged out all over the goddamn bubble. And any, you know, man that wants to tell you or try to minimize that is full of shit. You know, that's simply not accurate. Women are getting dogged all over the place. But now we're getting to a point where, you know, again, and I started off with this, and this is where I'm trying to work my way back to, is that to write a sexy poem would have gotten you in trouble back in the 50s, even the 60s. I mean, when was the Howell trial? That was in the 50s, right, with Allen Ginsberg, who turned out to be a freak in his later goddamn years. But, you know, at the time anyway, the Lawrence Ferlinghetti case for City Light Books over in San Francisco on whether or not gay literature could be sent through the mail. I mean, this was simply poems. Go look it up, Howell, if you're not aware of Allen Ginsberg's work. That's pretty much what made him famous, that and Kaddish. But Howell is what really made him famous, because he was known worldwide because of this massive court case. Now, you had that, and I don't know if this is a real book, and I remember telling Lupe about this some time ago. She doesn't know what I'm talking about. It was called The 7 Minutes. I don't know if the book was real, but it was a film. And what it came down to, this female author was being, she was charged with obscenity. And the book was basically about her, you know, pleasuring herself during the 7 minutes, recalling men and various experiences that she had. Now, again, this was I recognize it as a film. I don't know if the book was real. I've never taken the time to find out. But in the film, it's basically, you know, a woman was not supposed to have a sexuality. A woman wasn't supposed to have emotional feelings. You know, a woman wasn't supposed to have any, you know, erotic dimension to her at all. She was simply supposed to, you know, put up with it on Saturdays and sometimes Sundays and on holidays. This is how it was explained to me by older white people. And I'm saying it like that because when I speak to older black folks, older native people, older Asians and shit, it's a totally different story. You know, and I'm going to say this, Jews too. Sexual hangups, I know this point noise complaint, but, you know, I think he was kind of speaking for himself. You know, everybody else that, you know, I asked them what was happening. They said they were doing what the fuck they wanted to do. You know, so a lot of this has to do, again, with how we perceive ourselves. Now, yes, women have always been abused and put down, not just in this society, but worldwide. That is true. Anyone that tries to deny that is a lunatic. All right, that's somebody that you kind of look at, you smile, you nod, and you get up slowly and you walk away from them. You know, you don't listen to people like that. You know, we have entire societies that, damn near, if you look at what's going on in Afghanistan, their entire reason for being, it seems, is to throw acid on women and to do everything possible to make the lives of women impossible. You know, and we can say, oh, is their religion, which is why, you know, I had the last dispatch was about Dawkins and Fry, because I don't believe that Fry is an Islamophobe. Dawkins, he's playing with that title. You know, I think he wants to wear that crown. And if he wants to battle with Sam Harris over that, then he needs to go ahead and do that. But, you know, Stephen Fry, I have a hard time seeing him as a bigot, seeing him as a racist, and seeing him as an Islamophobe. Now, if I'm wrong, and I hope I'm not goddamn wrong. If I'm wrong, it won't be the first time I've been fooled. But I don't believe that. He made the argument that he is afraid of possible, you know, dangers of what's going on, which is reasonable. But, you know, all I'm saying is, you know, let's take a look at the cultures that how shaping the planet. Now, you can't blame Arabia for what the hell is going on with Miley Cyrus. You can't even really blame the goddamn black community in the United States for what the hell is going on with Miley Cyrus. You know, how you gonna blame her? Isn't she from Appalachia? Did they twerk in Appalachia? I'm not aware of that, Lupe. Did they twerk in Appalachia? No, they do now, right? You know, I mean, who is it? Chuck D? You know, whatever you see going on in black America, look at it 5 years later, that's what the mainstream's going to be doing? Yeah, that's exactly what the hell is going on. That's exactly what the hell is going on. That's exactly what the hell has been going on. You know, but again, like I said, the last dispatch, this is how they view us. Basically, as sexual animals, you know, because they're not looking at us as human beings. You know, I mean, come on, brothers. I've tommed in my life, you know, and I'm still a fucking assimilationist, right? How many of you, you know, I'm not calling you Uncle Tom's home, you know, I don't know what the term was. It used to be a term called sport for fellas that, you know, black, not really, you know, caught up in the whole, well, I'm just a nigga. Wow, man, you know, there's nothing I can do in my life. No, we want to see ballet. We want to try that, you know, that wine from Spain. You know, we want to see Moscow, right? You know, we're not, you know, narrow in our view of the world. Again, this is speaking as an African male in the United States living here with the nonsense, right? In the Michigans. You cats who are like me, dated white women for the most part, you got education. You've had some decent jobs. You don't wear sneakers. You dig what I'm saying? How many of us have been in that crowd, you know, hanging out, and then all of a sudden somebody said something, and we pretended like we didn't hear it, right? We just pretended like we didn't hear it. Because if we had said something, if we had challenged that particular white individual for, you know, saying whatever about black people, making whatever sort of generalized, whatever racist statement, whatever mighty white moment that you're encountering. How many of you choked up and said, nah, I'm not going to say anything, man, because if I do, really, I'm going to lose my position within this crowd. And I'm not going to be able to navigate in this anymore. I might actually have to go back to that goddamn ghetto I'm from, really, right? If these people see me as, you know, being antagonistic to their superiority. Now, I just said that. Now, think about women in this sense. I'm not speaking for women. I'm asking myself as a man of color who has the weight of white racism on the back of my neck every day of my life. I'm trying to put that towards women and then asking myself, why are they making the choices that they make? Yes, I'm rambling, but follow me now. See, I'm working this out with you as I'm sitting here. There's no script here to a whole lot of folks, but I know there's somebody out there who understands what I'm talking about. How many women out here, young, old, not so young, are putting themselves in positions so that they don't lose their status with that man, with that family, with that job, right? Will I lose my children if I stand up and say something? Will I be able to eat or feed them if I stand up and say something? I mean, there are so many women being abused, it's not funny. In all corners. All corners. So, you know, you have to ask. I mean, come on, think about that. I mean, even being abused by other women. I mean, look at what just happened in Texas not too long ago, where you had two women who were stopped on the highway because, you know, they assumed that they had thrown a joint or something lit out the window. They insisted that they had drugs on them. They found nothing in the vehicle. They found nothing in their pocket. So you know what they did? This officer puts on a rubber glove. It's the female, of course, because, you know, there are rules and proprieties. And decides to body cavity check these two women. And if I remember correctly, Luke, they were an aunt and a niece. They body checked them on the side of the road while people were driving by. While families are driving by. Well, any goddamn buddy's driving by. And here's the worst of it. This was a woman now, a female officer. You know what she did? She used the exact same glove on both women. So can I talk about not only the lack of disrespect, but the possible health ramifications from this? Another case like this, some prison staff, a private joint, they were released from their employment, meaning they were fucking sacked, right? Because they were on, instead of stopping an encounter, a sexual encounter between two women that they were watching on camera, they were sitting there oohing and ahhing and so on because it was a lesbian scene, right? Well, it turns out that one of the women was HIV positive. And of course, the other woman didn't know this. But they thought it was funny. And it turns out they knew the situation and didn't do anything to intervene. Now, that's sexist like a motherfucker. And I would like it if female activists said something about things like that. And I understand that the sex industry is completely fucked up and misogynistic. I mean, I'm with you on that. I'm totally with you on that. I mean, the whole idea of running a train on somebody, as the way the older generation would put it, that's bad enough. But you know what I've seen recently, let me be clear about this. I'm not, you know, saying anything about any particular person in the adult industry, but it just takes a little bit to look and just to see how blatant the racism and the misogyny is. I'm not even talking about sexism. It's beyond that. I'm talking about the misogyny. Now, you know, again, let's be clear here. I'm not a motherfucking square. All right? I'm not a motherfucking square, man, in any way, shape, or motherfucking form. And I'm going to say something else here because people have been, you know, asking me questions because of certain things I've said here. No, I have never at any goddamn time put no woman down on no motherfucking corner. You dig? That's not where I'm coming from. I've never claimed that motherfucking title. Don't want to. All I said was I'd known people and I've got family in that particular motherfucking, you know, line of work, who did it because they didn't have any other fucking choice. It was either that or starve. And I make no judgment calls. But I've seen, you know, there's a difference between a woman who's trying to support her crack habit or is being smacked up and beaten, forced out there to sell herself to give this money to, you know, this motherfucking creep to support his whatever he's doing. Because it ain't, you know, it ain't fucking pimping. You know, there's a difference between that and a professional goddamn, you know, prostitute, a professional sex worker. There's a big fucking difference. And depending on who you ask and the situation and the power play and what have you, you know, we can make an argument on who's being taken advantage of. But see, but the bottom line comes down to we're still dealing with a weakness. And no one wants to come out and say this. Men will never come out and say this. But the church has been saying this shit for centuries. You know, this shit is a weakness. It's really hard to control sexual goddamn activity. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it takes fucking discipline. And it takes a healthy attitude about the cycle of life. But the West doesn't have a healthy goddamn attitude about the cycle of life. The West doesn't have a healthy attitude about a goddamn thing. You see what's about to go off in Syria, even if they capitulate 100%. And now you got German intelligence saying that, you know, it may not have gone down the way that it said it gone down. This might have been, you know, something that's going on within his a privateer or whatever the fuck. Or a nutcase, as I'm suggesting, or simply a goddamn pot of, you know, people from within the Syrian military who decided to do this on their own for whatever reason, or maybe because they're working for somebody else. Who knows? Who knows? Who the hell knows? But it seems that no matter what, because Russia's government has gotten them to, you know, say, yeah, we'll give up or whatever, you know, stuff they want us to give up to try to avert this. And they're saying over here that, well, no, we're going to jump them anyway, regardless. All right, now, if you're completely confused about what I said about professional prostitute as opposed to, you know, the stereotypical, you know, crackhead hole that you find in your nearest black neighborhood, no, you know, there's a big goddamn difference. Now, you sell your body every time you get out and go to work and dig a ditch. Anybody that does manual labor, they're selling their bodies. They're selling their lives. They're selling out their youth to work in these goddamn jobs. Anybody that's ever worked blue collar knows your body is not unless you're lucky, unless you really had a good diet or something or just good genetics. For most of us, bad knees, bad back, bad feet, bad wrists, elbows, all kinds of, you know, health problems come up later. If you worked around chemicals, probably, you've got lung issues, you got eye issues, skin conditions. This is why working people need goddamn health care. Right? Because they're working in really usually not very good conditions. Then you have the stress of not having very much. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, simple common sense, you would think, right? If you want a healthy society. But see, they don't want a healthy society. They want a profitable society. And you can't have a profitable society if you're worried about people. So why do you think that they would give a damn about women? I've said this before and I'll say it again. White society will hold the white woman up as an ideal, and they will put her on a pedestal, and they will, you know, have her walk only on gold leaf. But it really, deep down in their gut, they don't give a damn about her. Because if they did, you wouldn't see what the hell you're seeing out here. Now, I'm going to go back to this porn thing for a minute. And like I said, I don't want to name any particular actors, but you see one here who just got into a thing where he had syphilis and didn't tell the woman he was working with. And now you have an AIDS scare, which has put a total moratorium on the entire goddamn business concern. You know, and that's another thing. That's another thing. Look at what the hell has happened with that. Now, you have Anthony Weiner, or Weiner, however you pronounce it. Weiner. He got caught up in a scandal where he's sexting, and I guess he's got, you know, he's got some women on the side. He's got a few mistresses or what have you. And one of the chicks that was involved with him, she calls herself Sydney Leathers. Is that her real name? I don't know. So she makes a parody porn video. She had done one, I think, beforehand. And then she did a hardcore scene. And then that cat, the fella that she was in the scene with, I don't know what's up with him right now, but the woman that he had just had worked with came up HIV positive. Her partner, who made straight and gay sex films, which is, again, you know what I'm talking about, the fluidity of all of this. I mean, I don't know what's at the center of this yet, you know, because they say there's a third person. They haven't released that name yet. You know, she, for whatever reason, gets into this sexting thing. She's, you know, sending texts to Weiner, and he's sending them both, you know, sending them back. So she got some fame. And what does she do? She jumps right into a porn film. I mean, there are sites that somebody was showing me. Almost all of these celebrities have a sex tape. It's almost like if your career is flagging, leak a sex tape. So don't tell me that the mainstreaming of pornography hasn't occurred. It occurred a long time ago. You just didn't notice. And this is where I'm going to make another dichotomy. There's pornography and there's erotica. Now, I know there are hardcore feminists that will tell me that Playboy was just as pornographic as anything else out here. And I mean, you know, we can sit and have discussion about that, but I'm going to tell you right now, I disagree. You know, as somebody who used to read the Playboy philosophy and has a fair amount of respect for Hugh Hefner in terms of, well, how can I say this without sounding like a sexist pig? Because for some of you, any mention of Hugh Hefner automatically relegates me to the to the level of sexist pig, right? But if you actually read the Playboy philosophy, and I mean read it objectively, yes, he's a male. He wrote from a male perspective, but he was also saying, what's wrong with women enjoying sex? And you tell me what the climate was like in the late 50s. In 1959, when he released that damn magazine. You know, women couldn't talk about sex anywhere. And what sex men did talk about was usually vulgar and, you know, totally ignorant. I'm sorry, Playboy was trying to find a medium. And I also want to say that the Playboy Foundation, a lot of people don't know this, supported, you know, well, as much as they could or would do. I mean, there was a fund that they had that, you know, people who had open relationships or people who were into swinging, men who were convicted of vice crimes, you know, for being gay in bathhouses or whatever. They had a thing called the Playboy Foundation, and they took the more high-profile cases. And, you know, I mean, they actually help fund the National Organization for Women. I know a lot of people don't know this. There's a lot of dichotomies here, but in order to understand what's happening, we have to look at all the dichotomies, right? I mean, let's look at the fact that Gloria Steinem, even though she's famous for having been a Playboy bunny, and then having, you know, founded the National Organization for Women, and then basically railing against Hugh Hefner and the Playboy enterprise, it also turns out that she's admitted that she used to work for the CIA. Don't believe me, look it up. So, you know, it kind of makes you wonder what the hell she was doing in the Playboy Foundation to begin with. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, you know, they were this really good concern. No, it was a magazine selling, you know, girly pictures with some really, really good goddamn articles. If you don't do anything else, read Playboy for the fucking articles and interviews. I mean, I'm sorry. They hired the best people for that goddamn magazine, and he was a hell of an editor and publisher. You know, I mean, despite everything else, I'm going to give him that. But it was not this evil view of women that you see, say, when Penthouse came around. Because we just looked this up, Bob Guccione. Now, I couldn't remember his name, but Bob Guccione, his magazine was everything that Playboy was not. It was vulgar. I mean, you could say from Cutting Edge to the last few times I looked at it, you know, when it was still on, I guess it is still. I haven't looked. I don't look at magazines anymore, at the magazine stands. I don't go to news agents anymore. Everything is online. But the last time I actually sat through and fun through one, I mean, it was going way further than what Playboy was doing at the same time. And then you had Hustler, which I'm sorry. If we want to talk about pornography, Hustler has to be seen as the turning point in terms of smut. I mean, there was nothing those articles were useless. They were racist jokes, but on top of the sexist jokes, right? I mean, he might have Larry Flint, he might have had a particular article in there, you know, once or twice that actually had anything serious to say, but that was usually about, you know, shit that affected his business. You know, Larry Flint, when, you know, ran for president and did everything else, not because he gave a damn about the United States. He gave a damn about Larry Flint. He sold more magazines. He sold more dildos and blow-up sex dolls, right? He sold more of those 8mm reel-to-reel loops. You know, when we used to call these things stag films, right? And again, if you look at them, I mean, you see, they're pretty... I mean, depending on who did it and what have you. I mean, a lot of them were pretty, you know, really low ground trash. And then you had shit that was just pure garbage. And then the other things that were legitimately sexy. But, you know, again, not being able to discuss sexuality openly, not being able to discuss feelings, not being able to discuss vulnerability, not being able or not being willing to discuss how women are being treated and how women are treated culturally, socially, politically, theologically. We've never really had these discussions. So, you know, in the meantime, while no one wants to have a serious goddamn discussion about any of these things, you know, Miley Cyrus will twerk and she'll jump up and down and there'll be copycats here and copycats there and they'll do the Harlem Shake all over the goddamn again, right? And we'll go through all of this and in the meantime, we'll still be stuck where the fuck we are at zero center, right? We'll still be at zero center. Still sitting here wondering how we got to this point. And they'd be like, well, wow, man, in 2013, you know, this went down. Here's 2015, 16, 17, and it's still bad. I mean, look, there's been progress, depending on how you define progress, right? I'm not a woman, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, frankly, I don't see any progress for women. You know, I see some women who are in high-profile positions. I see some women that have influence, but what are they doing? I mean, what kind of women are in these positions? You know, Condoleezza Rice, she was buying shoes and visiting New York to see the play Spamalot while people were drowning in New Orleans. What was Colin Powell doing Katrina or doing Stop and Frisk, right? Or the fact that, you know, every 28 hours a black man is being executed by a vigilante or uniformed officer in the United States. You know, where's Colin Powell while all this is going on? Yeah, Ben Jealous is stepping down. You heard about that? Ben Jealous is stepping down. So I have to ask then, what did he do? What did he do about the objectification of women? What does Oprah Winfrey do about the objectification of women? I mean, she goes to Africa. She sets up a school in her own name. You know, and they're all encouraged to start straightening their hair. How is this helping black women? You know, we need to sit and talk about what black women go through. And we also need to sit and like really talk about how that affects her relationship with her man. But no, that's too much to ask for, right? That's way too much to ask for, you know. Because if you ask for something like that, then that means you're actually looking at the system. And see, and who the hell really wants to do that? You know, a lot of men don't want to do it because, well, they want to maintain their edge. They want to maintain their social power. White people definitely don't want to do it because they want to maintain what the hell they believe really belongs to them, which includes your culture, which means that they can take it and twist it and rip it anytime they want to. I mean, you know, black folks who, you know, the political people who are kind of surprised about this, and I don't know why anybody was surprised, but the handful of you who expressed shock in some of your blog posts and what have you. I mean, how many white people, how many black folks have Chinese and Japanese and now I'm seeing Korean and what have you tattooed all up and down on your on the side of your head, on your neck? Can you even read what the hell they put on you? Do you even know what the hell they put on you? You know, I mean, I know not too many people are thinking about this, but somebody, you know, I know. He's got a big, kanji on his chest. And he thought it meant warrior or something. And it's, you know, like pig, the insult, you know, pig. And of course, you know, people laugh at him, you know, Japanese laugh at him when they see him because they can read. But everybody else thinks it's cool, you know. And he was really upset, and honestly, he could be upset, but he's like, why would anybody do something like that? I'm like, well, look at it from their perspective. You know, they still hear Ching Chong Charlie, right? You know, I've heard fellas, you know, do this. They had the Asian girlfriends, but they still do that Ching Chong Charlie shit and you know, make some of the most racist comments about Asian women. And here they're with an Asian woman. I know a jerk right now, fucking Air Force, right? Well, retired Air Force. He's a fucking jerk. He married a woman from the Philippines, and he's a brother too. But the fuck, he has nothing positive to say about Filipinos, and he talks badly about her. She's still with him, though. You know, think about what I said, and then think about her position. He brought her over here. So, you know, this is the best she's ever had. You know, I know the area that she comes from in the Philippines. It's a ghetto. It's a barrio. People go to the rubbish lots to, you know, if they're lucky, they can earn about a dollar a day picking through the rubbish. So, yeah, you know, she's not going to complain too much. And he can feel that he's King Farouk or has some kind of motherfucking, some kind of, you know, goddamn iceberg slim fantasy and shit in which he's living, you know, vicariously through his fucked up situation. I mean, yeah, you know, you got guys to do that. You see him in court and fucking shit every day. You know, there's all kinds of goddamn morons out here. You know, and it's like, you know, you don't want to really be in a position to say, well, you know, not all men are bad. Yeah, look, man, a lot of us are fucked up. What really gets me is that you'll have somebody decent. You know, not a knight in shining armor. You know, not some perfect man. Because there is no such goddamn thing. There's no such thing as the perfect woman either. That's being silly. But, you know, you got a lot of decent fellas out here. You know, they do, quote unquote, what they're supposed to do, right? They keep a goddamn job. You know, they're not abusive. They come home when they're supposed to. And I don't understand. You know, I watch a lot of these fellas. They have a hard fucking time in relationships. You know, I don't understand how that works out. And then I know a lot of real fucking lowlifes. And it seems that they can't keep women away from them. You know, I don't get that. And see, and that's something that women need to discuss. You know, I mean, it's something we all need to motherfucking discuss. But, you know, it shouldn't have to, we shouldn't be having these discussions about the, you know, violent pornography and other, you know, sexual abuse and racism and all of this shit just because, you know, Robin Thicke and Miley Cyrus did a fucking, you know, raunchy grind on goddamn MTV. These problems have been here and they're going to continue to fucking be here. And, you know, this whole thing about whether she has the right to co-opt other, you know, cultures and shit, it's not even a matter she has the right. She's white in America. She has a right to do whatever the fuck she wants, right? Free white in 21. I mean, if you're old enough to remember that. I mean, do you really think that attitude went away? And besides, the more extreme they act, the more money they're liable to make. I mean, come on, Lady Gaga? I mean, people used to think Madonna was beyond the goddamn pale. I mean, fuck, I used to think that the Coquettes from San Francisco were beyond the fucking pale. I mean, I'm looking at this, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I mean, it was going to happen sooner or later. It was going to happen sooner or fucking later. You know, remember when Two Live Crew was in Japan? For you hip-hop heads? Remember when they got kicked out of Japan because of what happened with the Japanese president at that time's daughter? On the stage while Two Live Crew was over there? Nah, this was bound to happen sooner or fucking later. So, you know, I don't know why anybody's surprised. And, you know, I think it's ridiculous that we waited till this particular incident before you finally want to discuss this shit. Well, I give you a hat tip. George Zimmerman supposedly threatened his wife. It's all over the news. Word has it that he pulled a gun on her. I don't know why. Don't give a damn why. George Zimmerman's a punk. You know it. He knows it. His wife knows it. The whole of Sanford, Florida knows that he's a fucking punk. So, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. We shouldn't be surprised. Now we're probably going to find out that he's been kicking her ass and you know, beating up and all this kind of shit for the longest. And we're already getting OJ comparisons, which are fucking ridiculous. And see, and this is what I'm saying. You know, I mean, Zimmerman's a punk. Oh, what is it? He punched her father in the nose? Yeah, we're looking at the Raw story here, rawstory.com. And they have here, you can get the audio, where Shelly Zimmerman tells the dispatcher, "I'm really scared because I don't know what he's capable of at this point, and he just punched her father in the nose." And the Orlando Sentinel reported that the father would not press charges against George Zimmerman. "We have no victim, no crime," says the police chief. Of course. Of course. Well, as I said, man, you know, there's a lot to discuss, and I wasn't, you know, and if I didn't make any sense, that's okay, because this entire fucking planet doesn't make any sense, and maybe that was my point. You know, this whole thing is crazy, out of pocket, it's unjust, women are being completely screwed out here, and I hate to say this, but some of you are willfully going along with it because you're not asking enough questions. And you know, for any feminist that just got upset because I just said that, well, look, you know, if it's my responsibility to liberate myself, well, it's your responsibility to liberate yourself too. So that would mean not involving yourself in the bullshit. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Listen to Angry Indian Radio. He is not only for Indians, but he is also for blacks and other minorities. And they have done a lot on the problems in Palestine and also the problems of blacks. And so I recommend that you listen to them.
Hi, I'm Gail Dines, and I'm author of the new book, Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. And people want to know why I wrote this book now. And the answer to that is that I want people to become aware of just how brutal and cruel pornography has become. Now, when I talk about pornography, I mean mostly the mainstream pornography you see on the internet when you type porn into Google. Many people think when I'm talking about pornography that I'm actually talking about a picture of a woman with no clothes on, smiling, standing in a cornfield. Those days are long gone. What you see today is much more body-punishing sex, where the woman is being penetrated anally, vaginally, orally, by three men at the same time, as they call her vile names such as whore, slut, bitch, and even worse. What pornography today is based on is the actual dehumanization of women. The more you dehumanize her, the more sizzle the sex has, the more hot it becomes. Let me give an example. One of the major sex acts today in pornography is called ATM, ass to mouth. And this is where they put the penis into the woman's anus and then immediately into her mouth without washing or into the mouth of another woman. Now, what kind of sexual arousal is there involved in this outside of the debasement of the woman? People ask me, how did pornography become so cruel? How did it get to the place it's at now? And the answer is that the internet changed the pornographic experience. It used to be generations ago, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 year old boy, hormones raging, would look for his father's Playboy or Penthouse and would have a very limited exposure to images of, you know, women with their legs seductively spread. Studies show that today, the average age of first exposure to pornography is about 11 and a half years old. Now, this is not exposure to Playboy or Penthouse. This is exposure to gonzo pornography, the body-punishing sex that you see. And we really don't know what this means, to be delivering this type of pornography all day and all night to some kid who's just developing his sexuality, who's actually encoding the pornographic images into his very sexuality. We are actually in the middle of a social experiment. Never before have we actually brought up a generation of boys exposed to hardcore porn images. And I can tell you, as someone who studies media images, as someone
we're going to take a break so stations can identify themselves.
This is going to have a profound effect on the way that boys develop their notions of sexuality, on the way they construct their sexual identity, on the way they think about women, on the way they think about themselves. All of us live now in a pornographized society. What that means is that the images and the messages and the ideologies of pornography seep into our everyday life. I mean, you just have to, you know, turn on MTV, flip through a magazine, look at the billboards, and what you see are really softcore porn images of women. Images that 10, 15 years ago were found in pornographic magazines. And one of the reasons that we've got such hardcore pornography today on the internet is that most of softcore pornography has migrated into pop culture. Porn culture looks like low slung jeans, thong sticking out, tramp stamp on the back, sort of what we used to be called stripper shoes, which is now everywhere. And increasingly our fashion sense is coming from the porn industry. They are really defining and deciding what it looks like to be sexual. Now, we've always had this in a culture. We've always had, you know, sexualized images of women. What's different today is the degree to which that image has crowded out alternative images. And the way in which girls are expected to carry the marker of sexual, of hypersexualization wherever they go. You go to school, you go out with friends, you go to the library to study. You're meant to look a certain way. Basically, what you have to do, if you want to be visible, is conform to this very, very limited, narrow standard of what it means to be female. That's what the image that bombards young women today. You cannot walk away from such images, especially such powerful images, unchanged. On some level, they impact on the way that you see the world. The impact on the way you think about yourself, the impact on the way you think about sexuality, on the way you develop your sexual identity, on the way you think about women, on the way you think about relationships. In the lectures I give at different colleges, what I found is that men are much more willing and open to speak to me about their use of pornography. And this is actually quite new. I would say that even recently, as 5 to 10 years ago, men were much more defensive around the pornography use. And today what I find is they're much more open. In fact, they want to talk about it because many of them feel like it's had a really negative impact on them. They're worried, they're concerned. They tell me that they feel like sex is boring because it doesn't live up to the expectations of porn sex. They tell me that they lose interest in sex with their girlfriends. They prefer the pornography. They tell me that they become much more critical of how their girlfriends look. And that I hear from many women as well that the boyfriends want to perform what I call porn sex on them. They want to do acts that they've seen in pornography, ejaculate on the face, pounding anal sex, in some cases the ATM, the ass to mouth. So what you see increasingly is pornographic images seeping into the consciousness and sexuality of young men. When I lecture to young women, what I find is that many of them at first are kind of bought into the porn culture. They see their worth in terms of how hot they can look. I mean, when you think about the society today, girls have two choices. They can either be hypersexualized or invisible. And a lot of them conform to the hypersexualized image, but they're not very thrilled with this. What they talk about is how they feel coerced, manipulated, pushed into this, that they've got no options because they are so surrounded by images of hypersexualized females. When they look around the culture and they think to themselves, what does it mean to be female? They are completely bombarded with images of a hypersexualized, young, usually blonde, white female. When they look around for alternatives, they barely exist because the hypersexualized images crowded out alternative ways of being female. You know, people often say, if you're against pornography, you're against sex, which to me is like telling me that if I was criticizing McDonald's for their labor practices and for their quality of food, somebody would accuse me of being anti-eating or anti-food. No, what I would be doing would be criticizing an industrial product. That's exactly what I'm doing with pornography. I'm not criticizing sex, I'm criticizing and critiquing the industrialization and commodification of a human desire. Porn is a multi-billion dollar a year business. It runs like other major businesses. It is out to maximize profits. The pornographers will do whatever they can do in order to maximize their profits. And I think we need to start thinking about the role that the business plays. We need to start thinking about pornography as having a well-oiled PR machine. We need to think about the ways in which they product place. We need to think about all the research they do on their consumers. I, for example, have an article from Adult Video News, which is the trade paper of the pornography industry, talking about the fact that one in five men who surf the internet is a porn addict. And this is an article on how the pornographers can create software to keep the addict more addicted. This is the degree to which they do research on their consumers. And don't be surprised. Why? Because it's an industry, and every industry has to do research on their consumers in order to stay in business. What pornography wants to do is basically maximize products. And what they have to do, which is the problem, is they have to keep an increasingly bored and desensitized male population interested. Because just think about this, if your average age of viewing pornography is about 11.5 years old, what are you going to want when you're 20? What are you going to want when you're 30 or 40? And what I found in interviews with men is that the more pornography they watch and the earlier they consume it, the more desensitized and the more bored they become. So what they need are greater and greater levels of cruelty, of brutality, new and bizarre sex acts where you're using things like speculums as torture techniques, where you're basically ejaculating, you know, many men at one time, ejaculating on the face of women. Now there's a whole new subset of that where they actually ejaculate into a cup and get the woman to drink it. I mean, these are just greater and greater levels of cruelty and debasement of women. And the porn industry is actually facing a problem because they feel, in a way, that they've run out of ideas. They've done just about everything they can do to the female body short of killing her. So they're really an industry that's looking for new ideas. Some of those ideas are going to be, I think, the sexualization of women who are 18 but look younger than 18. This is a way to keep men who are basically desensitized with images of adult women getting interested in images of younger and younger women. We have had sexualized images of children in this culture for many years. You've had Lolita, you had the Brooke Shields, Nothing Comes Between Me and My Calvins. You've also had the hypersexualization of Miley Cyrus, such as images in Vanity Fair, also when she was pole dancing at an awards show. I think one of the reasons it's so interesting is it's different. It's a change. It's something new. it's even more taboo than regular pornography. And really, pornography is about always breaking taboos. In fact, what makes it interesting is that it's taboo. And what's happening to the porn industry is porn is no longer taboo. It's just about everywhere. Children is the last taboo. I think we need to define pornography as a public health issue, a major public health issue of our time. And we need to approach it as we would approach any other public health problem. It needs to come from the legal system, from the education system, from healthcare. We need to also organize as a group. Individuals cannot fight a multi-billion dollar a year industry. Change happens when people collectively fight for it. And we started a group called Stop Porn Culture, which is stoppornculture.com. People can go on our website. We've written a slideshow, which is a 50-minute script with 100 slides, which you can download free of charge, which basically will help you start doing grassroots educational activism. That's one of the things we really suggest, is that we start raising consciousness as to the harms of pornography. What we want is a public debate about pornography. The pornographers came in and they hijacked our sexuality in a real way, which you look around and say, how did this happen? Well, it's about time we stop it. It's about time we wrestled our culture back from the pornographers. Because you know what? We deserve to define our own sexuality. The pornographers have no right to define what our sexuality should look like.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Thanksgiving. To this day, I can hardly bear to think of that quintessentially American holiday, Thanksgiving. When I do, however, I do not dwell on pilgrims with wide black hats sitting to sup with red men, their long hair adorned with eagle feathers. I think not of turkeys nor of cranberry, foods now traditional for the day of feast. Unlike Williams, I do not even think of the day's football games. And not thinking of it, I don't watch it. I think of the people we have habitually called Indians, the indigenous people of the Americas, those millions who are no more. I think of those precious few who remain and wonder, what do they think of this day, this national myth of sweet brotherhood that masks what can only be called genocide? Several years ago, I read a thin text that was pregnant with poignancy. It was a collection of native remarks from the first tribes who encountered whites in New England, and down throughout several hundred years. Throughout it all, the same vibration could be felt, no matter the clan or tribe, a profound sense of betrayal and wrong from people who were treated like brethren when they first arrived. Centuries later, what can Thanksgiving Day mean to Native peoples? Thank you for stealing our land. Thank you for wiping out our people. Thank you for placing a remnant of our once great numbers on rural ghettos called reservations. Thank you for abolishing most of the ancient traditions. Thank you for poisoning what little Indian lands remain with uranium. Thank you for poisoning the lands now inhabited by the whites. Thank you for letting Indians fight in American wars against other people. Thanks. The real tragedy is that millions of Americans don't know and don't want to know about Indian history and traditions. Today, the names of rivers, lakes, and landmarks bear indigenous markers of another age. The people, except for an occasional movie, are mostly forgotten, out of sight, out of mind. The easier to replace with false images of Happy Meals and turkey dinners. Happy Thanksgiving. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
Every day, one more Aboriginal person will test positive for HIV. Some will be rejected by their family, friends, and community. They will live in isolation, their voices no longer heard. HIV/AIDS stigma and discrimination denies our people the right to protect their future. You can make a difference. Be their voice.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Traditionally, Native women made all decisions regarding their reproductive health care. This was respected as women's business. Today, we are basically denied this decision-making power. It's time to take back that power of making decisions concerning our reproductive health. There is a choice we can make regarding unwanted pregnancy. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that must be taken within 72 hours after having unprotected sexual intercourse in order for it to be effective in preventing pregnancy. Contact your local Indian Health Service facility and ask if they carry Plan B. If not, tell them to order it. Plan B is an OTC, over-the-counter contraceptive, and a prescription is not necessary. You have a legal right to access this contraceptive over-the-counter. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Radio Insurgente, la voz de los sin voz.
Vamos, 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 vamos adelante, para que salgamos en la lucha avante, porque nuestra patria grita y necesita de todo el esfuerzo de los zapatistas.
Transmitiendo desde algún lugar de las montañas del sureste mexicano, en la frecuencia 97.9 en FM.
Yo, what's up? My name is Jasiri X, you know what I'm saying? And I'm really responding to the call, man, of my sister Rosa Clemente, you know what I'm saying? For Men in Hip Hop, really stand up and say, like, rape under no circumstances is acceptable. You know what I'm saying? Rape shouldn't be rapped about. It shouldn't be supported. You know what I'm saying? And I'm really feeling like, you know, especially after Rick Ross came out today and said what he said, you know, he didn't use the word rape, but he described a scenario in which, you know, he put something in a woman's drink and had sex with her and she didn't consent. If you have sex with a woman and she didn't consent, that's rape. And we have to say no to rape. And beyond Rick Ross, whether it's Fox News or their viewers attacking Zelina Maxwell for asking men to stop raping women, whether it's Hollywood, you know, perpetuating, you know, this rape culture, you know, it's got to stop. It's really, you know, we got to take personal responsibility as men. My name is Jasiri X. This is One Hood.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation and northwest coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.
First of all, let me set the record straight. I'm not hating on Ice-T. I think he does a very good job for what he does. Now, Ice-T has a lot of gold albums. That's one thing I will say for him. People just bought his shit because, you know, and then that whole cop killer thing helped him out. I know Tracy. There was a little joint back in the day called The Radio. And that nigga used to go rap and do battles at The Radio. But that nigga has been a rapper. That nigga ain't even been a gangster. The nigga's been rapping. The nigga was walking around breakdancing with everybody else. The nigga goes around speaking about the pimping. He goes around wearing pinstripe suits. He puts the perm in his hair. And he's got a fine. He keeps fine bitches around him. Bitches that he's marrying. Bitches that he's having kids with and he has a relationship with. Not one time will he say, I'm sending this bitch. Now, he's got this fine little white bitch and she's got the big fake titties. And she's a cute, you know, she's not really a fine white bitch, but the body is banging. And he's got pictures with him on his MySpace page. And you Google the shit. I don't feel like giving out the URL. And it says it's his official MySpace page. And the pictures that he has, I'm looking at the pictures and I'm saying, okay, then he just put up a new one. And he's got his hand like he finna pimp slap a motherfucker. And I tell you the exchange that we had. I left a comment on this page and I said, yeah, nigga, you know, the word is out, motherfucker. You know, I see the bitch you got. I'm finna knock you for the bitch. And I'm gonna set that punk asshole down. Quit acting like you pimping on this bitch. He wants to have the persona of a pimp, but he married this bitch. Nigga, and then you taking pictures with the hoe like y'all pimping and whoring, nigga. But behind closed doors, who knows what's going on? Meanwhile, on the MySpace page, niggas, oh, I see you pimping. I see you got your pimp hand strong. No, nigga, you see that motherfucker's rap hand strong. You see that nigga's actor hand strong, nigga. And you see that man's wife dressed up like a prostitute. So let's say this nigga's got his Halloween on. I see you got your Halloween hand on, nigga. You wearing costumes with the bitch. But the bitch ain't getting sent. And I bet you $1,000 next to a bucket of shit. You understand? That if anybody come looking at that bitch cross-eyed, he ready to fight behind the bitch. Somebody tell me something, goddammit. I bet you, goddammit, that nigga will fight you if you try to go say something to that hoe. Go ask that bitch to turn a date, nigga, for $2 million. Some shit the bitch can't fucking refuse. Some shit he needs. Ask him, can that bitch go turn a date with Donald Trump for $2 million? The nigga gonna save with that bitch. He not gonna set that hoe down, nigga. And the nigga need the $2 million. He ain't hitting him like that. He need that two-piece. Nigga, let the dime walk up, nigga, and offer that bitch your whole total income, nigga. Opportunity for you to double your income. And let's see if you send that hoe, nigga. Or where the bitch even go if you wanted to send the bitch. Most of the time, the bitch say, hell yeah, let me go get this motherfucking money. I bet you the nigga say, I don't want that man touching your titties. I don't want him having my pussy. That's my pussy. Psh, and pimping, though. So the nigga hits me back on MySpace and says, oh, wow, you're a hell of a comedian. So I emailed the nigga and I told him, yeah, nigga, the word is out, nigga. And I'm tired of suckers like you running around talking about your pimping. Quit running around here talking about your pimping, nigga. You ain't never pimped a day in your life, motherfucker. And you know what's so cold about it is, I'm not going to give that nigga the stripe to where, oh, well, maybe you did send a hoe while you was gangbanging. Nigga, I don't believe you checked one hoe dollar, nigga. You sucker-ass nigga going to tell me I sound like a comedian, but I bet you won't put me on the phone with that bitch, nigga. How about you let me talk to that motherfucking bitch, that Coco hoe, nigga, and we'll find out what's really going on. Because, of course, a bitch going to take hoe-ass pictures with you. And all this whole type of shit, nigga. You paying her? Why wouldn't she? Quit running around here talking about your pimping, nigga, and you ain't paid no dues. Nigga wearing pinstripe suits and you know, putting his hand out like he like a gonna pimp slap a motherfucker, right? And I'm not gonna endorse some suck-ass nigga that ain't never sold toothpaste on the track. The nigga knows nothing about the motherfucking whole stroke. If you sit down with Ice-T, man, with Tracy, and you really chop this nigga up about talking to him about what whole strokes he been to and asking about niggas in the game that ain't on TV, he can't name them. The only thing he can do is regurgitate, nigga, whatever the fuck Don Juan, Pippi Ken, or me, or somebody else like that, or Charm, just said out their motherfucking mouth in a movie he saw. But he can't pop no real game out his motherfucking mouth. Some little square-ass motherfuckers call himself interview him and call him a former pimp. That nigga ain't never pimped. Why you putting that label on yourself? Why would you want to? When I sent that comment about I'm about to knock that bitch, he didn't even want his bitch or anybody else seeing a comment that I said about him on his MySpace page when he should have just responded to that shit on his page. You better not never come to Europe with that bitch, nigga. Because when you do, nigga, if you ever show up in Europe with that motherfucking bitch, nigga, if you bring that Coco bitch, nigga, I'm going to be on her, nigga, and have that bitch on the yellow line in the middle of the street running from this pimping, nigga, because I'm going to keep popping in her ear, nigga, the whole time, motherfucker. And we gonna see how much pimping you got. We gonna see if you try to put a bodyguard on me. We gonna see if you try to put your hands on this pimping, nigga. You gotta keep it pimpish, remember? But I'm at that hoe, nigga, putting it in her ear, nigga. I don't wanna hear nothing. Set that hoe down, nigga, in the public, nigga. And don't be Pancho Villa neither, nigga. Give me some motherfucking room so I can say something to the bitch so she ain't worried about you snatching her ass up. If you think for one moment that bitch is gonna fuck with you just cause you got money, nigga, well, you got another thing coming, nigga. Cause when she hear what I got to say, motherfucker, she coming to fuck with me. And I mean this, nigga. If I ever, and I've never said this on the show, Snoop or Don Juan, Pimpy Ken, none of them niggas. But with this suck-ass nigga, if I ever see this nigga over here ever, I'm going to make it my business to get to wherever he's at, and I'm not going to say nothing to him. I'm talking to the bitch, and I'm telling it. See, that's what's bad. Nigga think I'm finna say something to Ice-T and start an altercation or confront this nigga and have some big old shit going on. No, it's not going down there, nigga. I'm talking to the bitch. I'm through saying something to you. You had your motherfucking chance, and the only thing you could say is, wow, you're a comedian. The only thing he could say. I got something to say to that hoe. And you know, you get a lot of dudes that's going to be on the stream. Our payroll couldn't say nothing to that bitch. Ice-T got millions. Man, you got me fucked up. ask some motherfucking body about payroll to motherfucking pimp nigga. Oh, he can't Nike iced tea. He got money. That don't mean shit, nigga. What a motherfucker got don't mean nothing. Been trees, nigga, standing up in the motherfucking forest for 200 years, nigga, and they get cut down every day. So don't think payroll can't come say nothing to that fucking bitch, nigga. I got something to say to that hoe. And it's gonna be more than just, yeah, baby, come sell your pussy for payroll, nigga. I got something to tell that bitch, nigga, and why she gonna come fuck with me. And I'ma peel your motherfucking ass, nigga. I'ma coon you like a motherfucking nigga. And you know what? I ain't gonna even serve your motherfucking ass, nigga. Just look for the bitch, nigga. Put her on the side of a milk carton or something. Cause I'm going to get some real money with the hoe. I had never wanted to say anything because a lot of people ask me all the time. So, man, is Ice-T a pimp? And I always say no. And that's all I say. No. No, he's not a pimp. But when the nigga, man, and you know, somebody had told me a while back, man, Ice-T got a bad white bitch, man. He got a bad white bitch. And I never went out my way to go see. Because to me, pretty is what pretty does. If the bitch ain't paying, fuck it. The bitch ugly as a motherfucker to me. I wouldn't give a fuck how fine the hoe is. And if that bitch is not an asset, then that bitch ugly as fuck to Ice-T. He just don't know it. If that bitch is a debit in his motherfucking account books, if it ain't never no positive shit coming to it, then that bitch ain't nothing. It can be discarded at any moment. And if you want to know what I'm going to tell the bitch, that's what I'm going to tell her. Bitch, you a debit. You ain't nothing. You a discard. She ain't bringing nothing to that nigga. She brings nothing to the table for him. You understand what I'm saying? And he not going to allow her to do that neither. All you going to do is sit around and have big titties and look around. Bitch, what's going to happen when them fuckers start sagging? You better fuck with some longevity, ho. Fuck with a nigga, you know what I'm saying? We gotta put some positives on this account. Have a reason for you to stick around. That bitch ain't nothing but a debit right now. You along for the ride, bitch. You in the right direction. You need to be fucking with a superstar, bitch, but you need to be fucking with somebody that's gonna help make, show you how to make something of yourself. She's sitting around, you know, waiting for him, his beck and call. Shit, I need a bitch that's gonna be a go-getter and go do something. He ain't holding like that now. If he make one fucked up investment, he's done. He's through. But you can believe one thing. Hey, I got something to tell that hoe.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the fourth world.
This is Radio Free Starfighter.
Dear Hip Hop, I'm writing to inform you I'm gonna have to end our relationship. I know in the beginning I was down to work, them hips, but I was tricked. Seduced by your beat. See, you had me for 3 minutes and 46 seconds. I was suspended in time, but when I snapped out of it, I had to ask, did I hear what I thought I did in that last rhyme? Now forgive me. Maybe I'm getting old or maybe I'm just slow, cause I didn't even know you could say bitch on the radio. But I was entranced by that beat I heard somewhere before. Oh, I remember that was the original score. Now unless I'm dreaming, I could have swore right after you called me a bitch, you called someone else a whore. And at this point I'm trying to process a few things. What were the original words to that song? And you want me to do what with my thong? And I'm tripping cause nobody's acting like anything is wrong. After all, the anthem for the new millennium was Big Pimpin'. And it all seems a bit surreal, cause when I was dancing around, I didn't know the damage my soul was gonna feel. And there are times I am still compelled to move, but I swear to you, it's that old school groove that's playing above the lyrics, because if the music wasn't there, I definitely wouldn't hear it. I thought hip-hop was supposed to be a means of poetically expressing yourself, but it seems these days you'd say anything to get your CDs off the shelf, so let's toast with champagne and blunts to your health, but first, tell me why. Every other video, brother's gotta be a gigolo. And you show your respect by pouring beer for the homie who's dead and then pour the rest of that 40 over some female's head. And what's crazier than that is she doesn't seem to mind, but if you look past her ass, deep into her eyes, you just might find a hint of surprise, cause she didn't realize that the camera shot was gonna be between her thighs. And she furthers a lie as she tries to deny, pretending like it's okay, that she just gave a piece of her self-esteem away. And it aired 9 times on MTV today, and all of that for little to no pay, but he's a hustler, baby, and he told you so. And when he's through, you're a video hoe. I'm trying to make it in this business, so I've actually stood in those high heel shoes, you know? And now when I go to the club, I see a sea of young women with fake diamonds bouncing around their waist, too little clothes on her body and too much makeup on her face, screaming, underlay, underlay, mommy, E-I-E-I, uh-oh. Were you that hoe? Was I that hoe? Or do we need to spiritually grow? anybody know what EIEI stands for anyway? Is it eternally imprinting, exaggerated ignorance, or exploiting innocence while extremely intoxicated? I'm starting to think this hip-hop thing has become way overrated, and you dedicated an entire song to how fast my ass is shaking? Tossing around money that you really ain't making? Didn't I see you on Court TV, accused of raping? But I'm the one hating. Well, maybe I am. Cause somebody needs to speak up on behalf of a man. So, no, you can't see my thumb. No, I won't back my thing up. No, you can't big pimp me into buying your CD. It takes a king and a queen to create a real dynasty. Why don't you set your mind free? Why don't you back that thinking up? Maybe you're already aware because you call yourself corrupt. And it's not hard to deduct when I keep hearing rumors that you're going bankrupt, that you just claiming head hip-hopper in charge, spending all your money on your boys just to prove that you're large. Cause all your real niggas still kick it with you. And there ain't no nigga like the one you got. So you ride for your niggas and you die for your niggas, cause you're a no limitations nigga. What type of nigga slanging bang in the streets? A bad boy, a rude boy, a 504 boy, a hot boy, a ghetto boy? Hold up, I got this plan. Stop calling yourself a nigga and a boy, and call yourself a man. Cause what I really want from my niggas is to realize that it's the root of the word that's the trigger, triggering thoughts through my temple of its real definition. Look it up, it's simple. Number one, ignorant. Number two, inconsequential and petty. Number three, stingy and miserly. But it's not the definition that comes as a shocker. What baffles me is that you call yourself a doctor. What are you healing, brother? And I'd really like to know, did you get that doctorate degree while you were on death row? Changing your name, thinking it'll contribute to your fame, but all you're doing is defaming yourself and your people, and you wanna know why we aren't seen as equals? Got all your jewels wrapped around your neck and your wrist. What happened to throwing up a fist to represent unity, to show our pride? Now the only time you throw up your fist to show off the fact that you want a Rolex, never mind the damaging effects that all of this has. Look around, it's spreading fast. Even Baby Bow Wow has his Mickey Mouse eyes down, when he should be fitting those jewels into his crown. Got little kids thinking it's a thing to hustle up your money for a little bling bling. Why don't you sing, sing the truth, play? Money really ain't a thing, you see, when you trade it into the dignity. And all you've done is perpetuate negativity, so I challenge thee. The next time that you're seduced by that beat, whether it's when you go to the club, get your groove on, or buy a CD, the next time that you're seduced by that beat, listen closely to the rhyme. And you tell me if that's what poetry was meant to be. Sincerely, Bridget Gray.
I'm gonna stand until I can't stand no more, if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. In Canada, medicinal use of marijuana is already legal. Now the Canadian government has announced that they will soon stop arresting marijuana smokers altogether. We can learn much from our neighbors to the north. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org.
D is for everybody, not just for the few. Anyone can share ED with someone nice as you. ED is for everybody, darling. Have no doubt that anyone
you're curious or confused, get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
I'm Forrest Whitaker for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, and this is my daughter, True.
Hi.
Life is full of choices, and many years ago, I chose to become a vegetarian, and it's one of the best choices I've ever made. And since True's dad was a vegetarian, she decided to be vegetarian, too. You may decide to go vegetarian for better health, for a better environment, or you could be like True and I and just decide you don't want to eat meat anymore.
I love animals and I love being a vegetarian.
I'm Forrest Whitaker.
And I'm True Whitaker.
And we're vegetarians.
For more information, visit PETA.org.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stanley Tookie Williams, and I'm speaking to all of you from San Quentin's death row, where I've been residing for more than 23 years. It was during solitary confinement from 1988 to 1994 when I began to undergo years of educating myself, soul searching, spiritual cultivation, and self-edification, which in turn led to my redemptive transition. It was by virtue of this ongoing process that I earned the right to both live redemption and to speak on it, even at the risk of being rejected and repudiated by the world. As a redeemed human being, I'm obligated to share with others through my children's books, memoirs, and presently, the redemption movie about the wrongness and the tribulations of my past behavior. I want children especially to understand and to avoid the tragedies of a thug life that perpetuates violence, death, and imprisonment. In this struggle, regardless of your race, color, creed, education, socioeconomic status or geographical locale, you can't turn a blind eye to the perils of society that can affect your children and you. Hear me well. I pray that none of your children will ever experience the living hell that I did. There are thousands of children who need your help that are being violated, affected, and cast to the wayside like worthless debris. It's never too late to save a child, regardless of how unapproachable, unreachable, unteachable, or how incorrigible he or she may appear to be. There's always a way to help. Remember, it's not up to the children to heal themselves. We adults must find the wherewithal to help them heal whatever it takes. The world doesn't need any more youths evolving into social nightmares that myself and others had become. It is my earnest hopes and prayers that all children in America and abroad will flourish in life and become educated, creative, spiritual, charitable to others, and to restore harmony and safety within society.
Hello, this is Maurice Muhammad, Minister of Information with Black Unity, and you can always find us at www.blackunity.name.com. And you're listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Internet radio, the smartest.